Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Buongiorno. I'm here today once again by my good friend and yours, and my brother, but not yours, Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I saw Wicked for Good yesterday. I'm seeing it again tomorrow.
I'm going to see it tomorrow, I think.
The new Knives Out. I've seen a lot of movies lately. The new Knives Out movie's coming out.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. What's it called?
Sing It With Me.
Yeah.
Wake Up Dead Man. Huh. Or something of that.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
The last one was a COVID movie, right?
Yes. I'm a huge fan of seeing a movie the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. I mean, I'm a big fan of seeing movies always.
Yeah, you see them all the time.
But there's something, I find something special. And they usually put movies out those days too. I know there used to be a big night to go out and drink.
Why are you into that? It just feels special.
It feels special. It does feel special. It's also like the beginning of the holiday movie season.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Wicked. Wicked for Good.
Wicked for Good.
Wicked feels like it took the cultural conversation by storm last year. And now this year, I'm interested to see. Seems like we've got the haters now.
Sure.
Who are like, we're not doing this again, so I'm going to give this a negative review.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, will we have another, like, holding space moment? Will we, you know?
I don't know.
What do we get?
I don't know. But I enjoyed it.
But I do know that I'm going to talk about some movies that I've never seen before, and so are you.
So, way back in 2023.
Can't believe it was that long ago.
You and I did an episode called Describing Movies We Haven't Seen. You gave me three movies that I had, you know, I had not seen.
And this is my idea, and I don't know where this idea came from.
It's a good idea, though. You gave me three movies that you knew that I had never seen and asked me to guess what I think the plots of those movies are.
Yes.
I gave you three movies. Usually we have some sense of like a culture idea. In the first episode, I gave you like Eraserhead. I gave you Escape from New York. You gave me Funny Girl. Mm-hmm. You gave me Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
This one was a little harder.
I chose that time and this time. I tried to choose movies that are like important to me for some reason. Is that how you?
No, not at all.
Huh, interesting.
I just chose, to me it was much more offensive. You're gay and I'm not, and I'm a nerd in a different way. So like, I see this as you give me gay movies and I give you like, I gave you a zombie movie I know you would never have seen.
Well, fair, but like that they still are important to me.
My movies are important to me.
They're not?
No. I like the movies that I gave you.
Okay.
But like none of them are like my favorite movies. They're just movies I know you wouldn't have seen.
Huh.
But as I was beginning to say, this was harder. I don't know if we could do this after this episode.
I thought it was harder too. I'm not sure. I think we might have dried out the well.
We've hit the wall on... You know, because we were texting each other and I was like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And you were like, yes, yes.
I was surprised at how many musicals you have seen.
Right. So, yeah. So, yeah. But so you were doing it too. You were like, this guy doesn't like musicals.
Yeah.
Let me pick musicals.
Yeah.
So.
And I will say like two of these movies are huge favorites of mine. One of them is like not a huge favorite of mine, but it's just one that I've seen that you haven't. So I get that.
Of the three you gave me. I kind of know the title of one. One, I did not know the title at fucking all.
Join the club because nobody knows it.
And the last one, the musical, was one that I've heard forever, but I have no idea anything about it.
Okay.
What
made you choose these three? Was it really just that I've never seen them? Because we got one that's really old.
I mean, I've seen you roll your eyes at genre things. So I picked a classic anime. It's okay. Very sci-fi.
Okay.
I picked a classic noir, which I wasn't sure. I asked you if you'd seen it. I wouldn't have been shocked if you'd seen it.
Okay.
It's like one of like, it's like a very big noir. Mm-hmm. And then I picked a big sort of 80s zombie movie.
Yeah.
That I was pretty sure you would not have seen.
Sure haven't. But I'm very familiar with the poster.
Sure.
And the, the VHS cover, as it were.
Do you want to start with that?
This is the one that I like. Okay, so maybe I should, because the other two. So should we say the three movies?
Let's not say them up front.
Okay. So this, of the three movies you gave me, this is the one that I couldn't like. I didn't have enough to go off of to make like a plot or like log lines. I just like stream of consciousness. I think this is the vibe of this movie.
No, that's okay.
And I'm curious to see how close I get to it, because I feel like I actually I nailed this one.
Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's a fun thing, too, which happened in the last episode, which is in some places we came close.
Yeah.
I try to not be funny. I think there is comedy in some of my guesses, just in that I'm playing with movie tropes. Almost like if you asked an AI to create a movie.
Yeah. Me too.
But I wasn't trying to pick things that I know wouldn't be in there, like crazy outlandish shit.
Right. Like I did with Avengers, because I just was like, I don't know what the fuck. So I started saying like, well, Batman was there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's start then. Okay. You gave me Return of the Living Dead from 1985.
Yes.
So this is, I'm very familiar with this poster. Oh, and I guess we should say, I think we told each other you can only look at the poster and like maybe who's in it and that's it.
Yeah.
Go off of that.
Yeah.
So Return of the Living Dead, I'm very familiar with this poster. And like I said, like seeing it in movie, in like rent video stores my whole life.
Famous poster.
So this is what I think, genuinely, this is what I think this is and what's in it. This is a parody of Night of the Living Dead. It's very low budget, very 80s. There are likely cameos by several WWF wrestlers and at least one performance by a C-list punk band. There are more than a few explosions. Some zombies have zombie sex for laughs.
Sure.
One of them raps at one point.
Oh. Okay.
There's a slew of awful jokes, but maybe one that was really good at the time but is now highly problematic. There's zombie tits at some point.
Mm.
There's a zombie Ronald Reagan, probably.
Huh, interesting.
And it ends on a freeze frame of a zombie winking at the camera.
Wow, you got really close with that last one.
Ooh, okay, great.
You're not you're a little close with some of the others. Some of it's a little 90s, and this is earlier than that.
Okay, this is 85.
Yeah.
Maybe the rap would be 90s.
I think I'm right. I believe the last you see is a zombie just, like, it's a skeleton. Like, a skeleton, like, sitting up in a grave, like, close up on his face. And, like, I think he opens his, he doesn't wink, he opens his mouth.
And it's a freeze frame?
And it's a freeze frame. Yeah, knew and that. That's the last
I knew it was going to end on a freeze frame.
And a punk song starts.
Yes, punk. Knew it was going to be a punk song.
The movie has a punk aesthetic, and a lot of the characters are punks, but the soundtrack is more like heavy metal.
Yeah, so going off the poster, it looks like this is like punk zombies.
Yes.
Okay. And is it a parody of Night of the Living Dead?
Sort of.
Because there's another poster that I saw that looks very straight. Like it plays it straight and serious. But then there's the one where with the graffiti and like the punk hairdos. I'm like, that's the one I recognize.
Right. All right. So Night of the Living Dead was written by John Russo and directed by George A. Romero. They couldn't agree on where to go, so they just like split it and said we could both do our own series.
Okay.
So George A. Romero did Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, and John Russo did Return of the Living Dead, and then Return of the Living Dead 2, 3, 4.
Oh, so this is the first in a series.
Yeah. So this is not a parody, but it is meant to be funny.
Okay.
And the movie Night of the Living Dead exists in the world of this movie.
Huh.
As like, let me tell you the real story. That movie, Night of the Living Dead, is based on something that really happened. And let me tell you the real story.
What other movie does that? I feel like that's been done in a couple
lot.
Yeah. Okay.
So the plot is it's 4th of July in the 80s. And this one, there's a gang of like punk kids. Like one has like a mohawk, like what you see on the cover there.
Yeah.
I don't remember if you see zombie tits, but there's, if you listen to the PCMC on like our favorite nudity, there's one of the punks named Trash. She dances naked on a grave, and that's like a very famous nude moment. She's not a zombie at that moment.
Okay.
She does become a zombie later.
When you
say
80s and punk, they're going to be tits.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. There were tits in like family films in the 80s.
Yes, for sure. So it is a funny movie. All right, so like it takes place, most of it takes place at like this medical supply company called You Need a Medical Supply. And there's this old guy and then a new kid who's starting to work there. It's his first day of work. And he's one of the punks. And his friends are going to hang out with him after work mm-hmm. on his first day. So they come and there's a cemetery right across the street. So they're hanging out in the cemetery waiting for their friend. The old man is giving the tour of the whole, you know, place. And these two are a really funny duo. And actually, in Return of the Dead Part 2, they are in it as two different characters, but similar play a similar role off of each other. And the old man's like, you know that movie Night of the Living Dead? Well, that's based on a true story. What the movie doesn't tell you is that it's actually because the military was working on a chemical weapon, and that's what caused the zombies. And I know because by accident, one of the barrels of this of whatever was sent here. It's in our basement. Do you want to see it? So the guy's like, okay, yeah, I'll see it. So they go down, and of course, they stupidly open the barrel, and the toxin comes out, and then heavy metal music starts, and it's the credits. And
heavy metal music.
And you, that first zombie that comes out of there is called the Tar Man, who's like this zombie who looks like tar. He's like famous zombie from this movie. And then it's a zombie outbreak. They there's a really funny things start coming alive. Like since it's a medical supply company, they have like a half dog thing for vets, but like half the dog is alive. Like a guy, you know, one of the cadavers comes alive. They chop him up and they want to go and they want to burn it and they want to cover their asses for what they've done. So they go to a crematorium that's across the street, and that guy who runs that is probably an ex-Nazi who's hiding, and they want to burn it. But of course, when they put it in the, they burn. They convince him to burn it, but it's raining. So when it burns, the smoke comes out and hits the rain, and then that comes down on the grave, and then there's a zombie outbreak. This movie is famous for – this is the movie where zombies say brains, brains.
Oh, okay.
That starts in this movie. That's not in the Night of the Living Dead movies at all.
Yeah.
In Night of the Living Dead,
That reminds me of like – I feel like that was on like The Simpsons.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Night of the Living Dead, they eat all sorts of – they just eat people. But in this, they want brains. There's a famous funny moment where paramedics come and the zombies eat them, and then one of the zombies gets on the radio and goes, "Send more paramedics." And how does it end? In typical sort of punk fashion, there's the army, the military finds out about it, and they destroy the city. They just drop a nuclear weapon on the city, and that's and then where the end. Everybody dies. From there?
Because then there are other sequels.
It kind of just like just restarts. It's just the same shit, really. The sequels are not nearly as good. This one is really, it's a very funny movie. It's good looking. This is a very good movie. So you were close in some ways. There's tits, punk.
A freeze frame.
Freeze frame. You got the vibe from the from the poster.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was worried that it was going to be like total, like, no, that's just the poster. It's totally just a straight horror movie.
No.
It doesn't have any of that stuff.
It's a comedy mostly, really.
It's an interesting direction to take it in.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, well, even the writer, though, John Russo, I don't think it became what he wanted, because then they brought in, what's his name? Dan O'Bannon, who wrote Alien, and he made it more of a comedy. It's a weird, how it came to be is weird. But Night of the Dead in general is weird because it was never copyrighted. Well, so like there's a billion versions of it, and then versions in other countries about
it. I was going to say, like, isn't this somehow connected to like the zombie films in Italy?
Well, the zombie films by Lucio Fulci, when we call it zombie, but when it came out in Italy, it was called Zombie 2 because they called Dawn of the Dead Zombie.
So it's a sequel to Dawn of the Dead.
Right.
Which in itself is
But it's not really. It's just... Wow, so they just called it that.
What a weird story to history this whole franchise has. Because then Dawn of the Dead has been remade.
Yeah. But we can make...
Night of the Living Dead was also remade in the 90s,
yeah, right? Yeah, Night of the Living Dead has been remade a bunch of times.
Really?
Yeah.
When else?
There was one in like 2005.
Oh, really?
There's all sorts of shitty versions.
Do any of
Someone
them?
Did a weird shitty version... Where they added new scenes to the original.
Oh, I remember that.
Super religious for some reason. I remember that.
And it like looked like it was filmed on video.
Yeah, it was very weird.
But The original, I guess, or the Romero ones, they each have a message, like a social commentary.
The Romero ones do.
Yeah, like the original Night of the Living Dead is an allegory for racism, right?
Yeah.
And then the second one is consumerism.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the third one is.
Third one is the military industrial complex because it takes place in a military base.
Oh, is that the one where they like, there's like one good one?
Well, there's one that talks or learns to talk. That's the first one where there's a good guy and bad guy that are people, and then the zombies are just part of it. And then there's the military, because like, there's military and scientists, and the scientists are the good guys, and the military are the bad guys.
But then what about like Diary of the Dead and like those later ones?
He made three more. Land of the Dead I like because it's about like a fortified city where the rich people live. That was made during the George W. Bush administration, and the villain played by Dennis Hopper is made to look like Dick Cheney, and it's got a lot of that rest politics in peace. In it. Diary of the Dead I didn't like because it's like a found footage movie. It felt like shitty. He wasn't being innovative. He was chasing something else.
Isn't John Leguizamo in one of them?
He's in Land of the Dead. And then the last one was Survival of the Dead, which is like a Western. And that one implies that the zombies are the next stage in evolution because at the end, the zombies start eating fresh food. And then his daughter just made Queens of the Dead, which is like a...
Oh, I remember that.
It's like a queer comedy. Queer, yeah. It's like a queer comedy. Fun. And it's Romero's daughter.
Huh, okay. So which one do you want to do?
Let me do If Lucy Fell.
Okay. What did you know about this?
Nothing. I've heard the name If Lucy Fell.
Okay.
Knew nothing about it. I did look up the poster after.
Okay. And so after?
No, not after, but when you assigned it to me. I looked up the poster, okay, and I saw that Sarah Jessica Parker was in it. So I have a whole plot.
Okay, great. I'm going to pull up, just to keep myself organized, I'm going to pull up like the plot also.
Sure.
Okay, the real plot.
Sure. Okay, so If Lucy Fell, Sarah Jessica Parker plays Lucy, a city kid who grew up in Manhattan in the lap of luxury. After high school, instead of going to Europe and studying architecture like her dad, she decides to stay local and dorm at NYU and study film. When putting up flyers in the quad calling for auditions to be in her student film, she meets a guy. He's a Midwesterner who is new to NYC, but he's got like a Tarantino edge to him, and he thinks he understands real cinema, and she only is interested in rom-coms. In one scene,
so are they in college?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
In one scene, she brings him to see the classic Howard Hawks Bringing Up Baby, starring Katherine Hepburn and Cary Grant, and he learns the beauty of rom-coms. At some point, they have sex, and he blows her off afterwards, and she's upset about it. He eventually apologizes and helps her finish her film. She wins the student film festival.
That's it?
That's it, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's If Lucy Fell. Oh, and at some point, Bizarre Love Triangle plays.
Huh.
Every time, yeah.
Well, I gotta tell you, not all close.
Okay.
So Sarah Jessica Parker is in it.
Yeah.
And you are on the right track. She is like a born and raised city person.
Nice.
And then that's where it ends.
Okay.
So this movie was on like all the time on HBO when we were growing up.
Do not recall.
So this is a little ditty from 1996, right before Sex and the City.
I also tried to not look at the years.
Oh, okay. I did.
That's
so
all right.
Maybe that colored my... So this is right before Sex and the City.
Oh, right before Sex and the City.
Right before Sex and the City. So it's like right before.
You're right.
So it's like a rom-com.
Sure.
She is not in college. None of them are in college. Okay. As a matter of fact, one of the big plot point is that they're all about to turn 30.
Oh, okay.
So she is best friends with her roommate, Joe, played by Eric Schaefer.
Okay.
She is working as a child therapist.
Huh.
Or child psychologist.
Sure.
It's never made quite clear. One of her students is a child, Scarlett Johansson.
Okay.
Or one of her like people.
When does she make a student film?
She doesn't. He's a teacher. He's okay. Like an art teacher.
Does he have a Tarantino-like edge to him?
He's quirky.
Okay.
He's quirky and weird. This was like a vehicle for him. Like, he wrote it and was like, I'm going to star in it, and I'm going to get Sarah Jessica Parker to play my love interest.
Okay.
They make a pact. They're both kind of weird. Okay. They make a pact that they'll jump off the Brooklyn Bridge together.
Oh.
If they haven't found meaningful relationships by the time they turn 30.
Wow. Okay. So the fell is like real?
Yeah.
The fell?
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah.
And she's Lucy?
She's Lucy. Okay. She is Lucy. He's Joe.
And does Bizarre Love Triangle play at any point?
No, but this,
was it in the trailers?
No, but this does have this has a soundtrack that slaps.
Okay.
From a band called, hold on, let me pull them up. It's really hard to find the album because they're like one of those people not on Spotify.
Uh-huh.
I think it's called Call Me Jane. The band.
Huh. Oh, they're the whole soundtrack?
They're like the whole soundtrack. There's this one like girl band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Marry Me Jane, it's called. And you can only find the soundtrack to If Lucy Fell on YouTube.
Huh.
And when you look at it, like all the comments,
mm-hmm.
look, I'm showing Mike now the comments. The comments are all like, oh my God, I love this back in the 90s. Did anyone ever see If Lucy Fell?
Okay.
And it's all like Gen Xers being like, I love this album and I love the movie. One of my favorites in my early 20s. Wow.
So Gen X, you think
this is a big Gen X movie?
I mean, I'm not Gen X, but I'm on the borderline.
Look, this comment just says If Lucy Fell! ! So it's kind of an indie.
Okay.
It is an indie and kind of a cult movie.
I got that feeling
from
the poster.
So they both try to start relationships. He pursues this woman who lives across the street, who he's been like weirdly watching for a long time, whose name is Jane, played by Elle McPherson.
Okay.
She starts dating a weird performance artist named Bwick, who's played by...
I feel like I'm closer than you...
No, they're not college. They're not filmmaking. Oh, you got the vibe of like, this is indies, New York, 90s.
Yeah, yes. I feel like I got the vibe.
But it's much more like they're full adults. They want to open a school together. Part of their dream is they want to open their own school, whatever.
And
she is rich. Her dad, she has a scene where she's with her
dad.
And
he's an archaeologist?
No. He's like a cold, like rich type.
That's what I was imagining.
Yeah, yeah. And she asked him for money to open a school. She and Joe want to open a school together.
But you were talking about an artist.
An artist named Bwick, played by
who?
Ben Stiller,
okay.
Playing like a weird like artist guy who like takes a flower and then like crumples it in his hand.
I feel like maybe I did see this half in a dream.
Maybe.
And then you're
reinterpreting it.
Yeah.
He goes on a date with Elle McPherson. They start having sex and she mentions to him that like she knows he's been watching her. And so she's getting off on the fact that he's been watching her. So that turns him off. Her relationship with Bwick gets...
Bwick.
His name is Bwick Elias, and he's supposed to be like the hottest new artist. Okay. And it's like Ben Stiller being like a crazy Ben Stiller character.
Sure.
Very similar. This has got a lot in common now that I think of it with like Reality Bites.
Okay.
Of like, we're friends and you're dating Ben Stiller, we're going to end up together.
Yeah.
So then that relationship goes south, and then... they have this really sweet moment. And so many weird people are in this movie. There's an old man who sits outside the deli that Joe goes to every morning, like the bodega, played by Dominic Chianese, Uncle June.
Oh, okay.
And he's like just like a cranky old man that Joe always like messes with.
Okay.
And then there's a part where he's like, you know, like Jane, it didn't work out. This was the girl of my dreams, whatever. And then Uncle June, who's not Uncle June, but his name is Al in the movie, says to him like, when are you going to realize that the girl of your dreams is not the girl in your heart? And then he's like, I love Lucy. And at the same time, her like patient, Scarlett Johansson, makes her realize that she loves Joe. And then they meet on the Brooklyn Bridge and they kiss. And then at the end, she says, If I fell off the bridge, what would you have done? And he says, I would have caught you. And it's really sweet. And it's just like,
so why is it so important to you?
Because I saw it a bajillion times in the 90s. It's just a nostalgia hit.
Sure, yeah.
The soundtrack slaps. You got great 90s New York in it. It's got a great 90s New York vibe.
Yeah.
It's just a fun watch. It's a fun watch.
Okay.
And I don't know. It doesn't really get any, like, it's like a
you
forgotten.
You and I grew up in the same house.
It's like a forgotten movie.
Yeah, but I don't know how I, like,
so
missed it.
So, you know how I think we missed it? You and I shared a bedroom until we moved to Staten Island.
Yeah.
And then at that point, we diverged.
Yeah.
Like, you went one way and I went the other way. And then we started watching different things because we had our own rooms.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
I think this is – and then I was like, oh, I'm gay because all the stuff I wanted to watch was like this. But so this is like a big, like, middle school, like, oh, my God, this is a great movie. Okay. It's so sweet.
I want to see
I love
it.
Sarah Jessica Parker. It's a fun
Is it still
movie.
Funny?
I think it's still funny. I think it's extremely charming.
Okay.
It's a charming movie.
Well, that's all you need from a rom-com.
Yeah, yeah, it's charming as hell.
Do you know Uncle June is in Godfather Part 2?
Yes.
I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
I saw it again recently.
He's also in Dog Day Afternoon.
What is? Yeah, he is.
I watched that recently on an airplane, and I was like, that's Uncle June.
Yeah. Yeah.
He plays his dad, I think. He plays Al Pacino's dad.
Okay. Okay.
He was always
Aren't
old.
Are they doing a show?
Yes. With the guys from The Bear.
What's weird is there's the subplot of he's stealing the money for his partner who wants to get a gender reassignment.
Which is not really – I always
They
heard,
play it a little bit like a joke, but it's also wildly progressive that it's in there at all.
Well, first of all, it's also very faithful to the true story.
Okay.
Or like pretty faithful to the true story. Yeah. And that was really the real motive.
Wow.
And I feel like if it were a big Hollywood movie made today, they would have like left that part out.
Yeah. I feel like people forget that part.
It's weird. But so this is – it's funny that you bring that up because I had never seen it before, but I knew that that was like – that gets revealed at one point. But I was surprised when I watched it like how big of a part of the movie it becomes.
Well, it's Chris Sarandon, right?
Yeah. And he comes in and he has a long scene and then they talk about like their relationship. He calls him his wife, right? Yeah, they're like – he says, I want to talk to my wife. And then they show his real wife and then he's like, no, not her. And then they bring Chris Sarandon.
I need to rewatch
it's
that
a really
movie.
Weird, but really, like in some ways, like just progressive in the fact that like it's on screen at all.
Yeah, yeah, no,
at
exactly.
That time period,
it's played a little bit goofy. But
well, because
it's progressive
some of the,
that it's on screen at all, and then it's not all a joke.
Some of the crowd, like the Attica crowd, you hear them being like, "He's a queer," so like they start to like turn on him at that point when they find out.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But yeah, the whole movie, I was riveted watching it.
Yo, it's a great movie.
It's really great. I'm excited to see I'm excited to see the play. I think it makes for a good stage play.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, that would be good. Wow. Interesting. Okay. What's next?
Well,
new?
You want to do
whatever you.
Let's do
Dealer's Choice.
Akira. Okay. So I truly know nothing about Akira.
Did you know the name?
No.
So it was complete nothing.
Complete nothing. I'm going.
When you looked at the poster, did that look like anything to you?
Didn't ring a bell.
Really?
I will
you
tell
you. You don't remember. It was like one of the first breakthrough animes. I remember like MTV on like a Saturday night. They would have commercials for you could order through the phone, the VHS of it.
Don't remember
like
that at
the
all.
Groundbreaking film Akira.
Oh, wait. Actually, now that you say that I remember.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That I remember now.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember it then, and I'm just going based off the poster of a boy dressed in all red walking up to a red motorcycle. All
right, let's do it.
And one of the posters I looked at, it said Neo Tokyo is about to explode.
Yeah.
So that's all I had to go on. All
right.
Yeah. Really. Ready.
All right.
Okay.
How great would it be if you just 100%
what if
accurately...
I just nailed it totally? Yeah. Okay. Like his father before him, Akira was born to race. He grew up watching his father, one of the best racers in the world, absolutely dominate the Japanese version of NASCAR, but with motorcycles. Okay. Wait. It might have slipped at the speed racer. And he was about to make his debut alongside his father at the age of 15. Mm. So they have this debut together. But then at that event, he witnesses dad spin out, crash, and die on the track.
Huh.
He vows never to get on a bike again. So we cut to 10 years later. Akira is living a dull workaday life and is an unhappy alcoholic. Suddenly, tanks roll in. Neo Japan is under siege by a villainous big bad and his troops who says he's going to explode the city unless Akira beats him on the racetrack.
Hmm.
The whole city waits with bated breath for Akira's response, but he says, I don't do that anymore. I killed my father because he was waving at me when he crashed.
Uh-huh.
His mom tries to convince him by saying his dad would want him to step up and be brave, and he shouldn't blame himself for his death. He says no. Later that night, he gets a call from the villain who says, "Are you afraid I'm going to end you on the track like I did to your dad?" Cut to a flashback of a repressed memory of the crash and Akira looking up and seeing the villain in the crowd. So he says, "You killed him. It was you." And he says, "That's right. I cut his brakes. He and I knew each other as children. We grew up together. He betrayed me by marrying my first love, your mother. And now she and your city and everyone else you love are going to die unless you settle this score with me." He immediately decides to race. There's a training montage. It's the day of the race. After an auspicious start, Akira falls behind. It looks like he might lose. His dad shows up as like a force ghost and starts speaking to him to avenge me and save our city. So Akira makes a quick U-turn, starts racing down the track the wrong way. And the villain doesn't know what to make of it. He loses control of his bike and crashes. The city cheers. His mom runs out and hugs him as they watch the villain suffer the same brutal fate their beloved husband and father did. The end.
Wow. You got it exactly. Right.
Yes. I've seen this movie, Mike.
You,
what did I get right?
Oh, he has a motorcycle.
Okay. I was waiting for you to be like, Akira's a girl, first of all. Like, none of it's
He's
right.
not Akira. Akira is not the lead character.
Is Akira the bike?
No, Akira is a character that you meet later on.
Okay.
You got the vibe totally off.
Oh, it's not an action?
It is.
Okay. So, like, I was going, I knew it was an action.
Yeah.
I knew it had something to do with a motorcycle. I knew Neo Japan was going to explode. So I went off that.
Okay. So Neo Japan is, this is after World War III. And
oh, so it's like a dystopian future.
Kind of.
But, oh, so that's why it's Neo Japan.
Right. Okay. So it's a lot like Blade Runner, the city, the Japan.
So
it's
that's
like,
what I was picturing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there, and the lead character is in a motorcycle gang.
Okay.
Okay. But so World War III was started by what people believe was like someone bombed Japan. But what really happened was Japanese scientists were taking children with psychic powers and trying to work on their powers. Stranger Things stole this.
Huh.
And one of them named Akira exploded. And that's what caused the explosion and started the war. But no one in Japan knows that.
Is part of the discourse about Stranger Things that it stole from Akira? Like, do people say this?
No. But okay. part of the discourse of Stranger Things is that it's an amalgam or a remix of popular culture from the 80s.
Well, yeah. It
like is. I don't know if you've caught up with it, but like.
No, I've only watched the first season.
The last season kind of finally revealed the villain, and he's basically Freddy Krueger. He's the same. He looks like Freddy Krueger, and he basically could do what Freddy Krueger does.
Are they still supposed to be children?
Yes, but they're now older than me.
They're like 40, yeah.
Yeah. So. There's a terrorist group of good guys that are trying to, because there's an oppressive government. Oh, when Akira exploded, this gets weird. When Akira exploded, he became part of all of existence. So some people know his name because he's like part of everyone. So there's a religious cult of people that worship Akira and waiting for his second coming because they think he will liberate them.
Huh.
Is
this super long?
It's 2 hours.
Okay.
The motorcycle gang, one of the kids in the motorcycle gang has a run-in with one of these psychic kids, and he starts to have psychic powers, and he starts to be able to move things with his mind and stuff like that.
The psychic power angle, I did not.
Yeah. He sort of is the second coming of Akira, but at the end he explodes and everything explodes. And
that's how it ends?
Yeah. But it's like no. It's like an implosion and I forget. You know, like it's also like I should say I'm trying to narrativize it. It's a very abstract, very heady sci-fi movie that you have to
like Dune.
You have to like watch a Akira explained video online. Because some people might say that I'm misinterpreting it.
Have they ever like remade it or?
For a long time, Steven Spielberg was working on trying to do a live action one, but it never came to be, and it shouldn't because it's a perfect anime. It shouldn't be live action.
Is it? Do you watch it dubbed or with subtitles?
Controversial. I prefer dubbed when it comes to anime because I don't want anything to pull me away from the mise en scène. And
okay.
It's not like a dubbed Japanese live action movie. Even the word dubbed, honestly, is incorrect because dubbed means that it's a certain language and then it's another language is put over it. With animation, sound and visuals are completely dissonant. It's just a version that has English. So yeah, I always go for English.
Right, because the mouths moving don't actually
fit anyway. And it's just a different track.
Why do you say that that's controversial? Do people are there purists who are like
pure anime fans who are like, no, you have to watch it in the original language, which I do if I have no other choice. But if I have a choice, I want because I want nothing to pull me away from what's going on. Anime is such pure cinema. It's, you know, that's what I love about it.
When did you get into anime? Because I don't remember you ever being into it like when we were kids.
Like, not like recently. I mean, okay. There's an episode of PCMC called Anime 101 that's sort of like me beginning to get into it. I kind of got
more. And who like was your Sherpa?
On the episode is Anthony Montantine, who was on a couple episodes of PCMC, a friend of ours. But also, like, when I started dating Jen, she was really into Disney, so I got more into classic animation, and then I got more into anime. So just in general, I guess I always kind of liked animation, but I got really into animation and anime in the last, like, 5-6 years.
So you saw this recently?
I saw it, I think, the first time, like, when I was in grad school, maybe, like, 2010, 2011. It is, like, a very famous anime. That's why I was surprised that you never even heard the name.
Well, I hadn't until you said what you said about the MTV commercial. I remember.
I should also say there's something that people call the Akira slide, which is a shot in this movie that is homaged hundreds of times in movies. And it's the shot is the kid stops his bike, but he stops it by going horizontal and skidding out. And if you just go on YouTube and put in Akira slide, you'll see it in – it's in it, – yeah, there, I see. It's
there's
in,
a GIF right here.
It happens in the movie Nope.
Yeah.
The Akira slide is like a big, you know, image from this movie.
Interesting.
From the poster, you would have
– I just pulled this up, and it's – this says, I'm sorry to report that the sickest Akira slide is from the Mighty Pups movie.
No, it's all over animation. It's all over, even live. From the poster, you would assume that the bike is a bit.
It's like he's walking up to the bike. Yeah. I thought it was the thing.
It's a totem of the movie. It's one of the most like recognizable things in the movie, but it's really not what the story's about at all.
Interesting. Oh, Nope comes right up.
Yeah.
Kiki Palmer does it.
Yeah, yes, right. When she's on the bike trying to follow the thing.
Nope is such a great movie.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Wow, that was
not really close at all.
Not really. No. Well, yeah. Nope. All right. Do I go?
Mm-hmm.
No, I just went. I did a
Kira. Oh, yeah, sorry. So I go. Sorry. I'll do All Over the Guy.
Okay, what did you know about this movie?
Nothing. Never heard the title. Never heard the title. Okay. Knew nothing. Okay. Still know nothing.
You can watch the movie and still know.
I looked at the poster and I can't remember even what the poster looks like.
It's feet. It's like a guy and a girl's feet and then two guys' feet.
Okay. All right. The lead character is a young lady killer who has a new girl every night of the week. But one day he meets the older brother of one of these girls and he's this big jock guy. The jock guy makes fun of the lead character for being soft and emotional while he's tough and strong, but it's clear there's a romantic tension between them. One day they're play fighting and begin having sex. This leads to a secret relationship. The lead character is coming into his sexuality, but the jock guy is having a harder time with it, and he says they're just playing around. I think a little bit of Brokeback Mountain got in here. The one guy being like, we're just playing around. That's Brokeback Mountain. The main guy also has a sassy female best friend who secretly loves him. He also has a sassy grandmother who he lives with, who always knew he was gay. I'm really going out on a limb here.
Yeah, this is...
The girl who is the sister of the jock finds out about their relationship and outs them to the whole school. At the school prom or talent show or big football game, the main kid declares his love for the jock eye and everybody's happy. I think in the end, a little bit of Will Grayson gotten there.
Yeah, so this is – okay.
Is it gay story at all?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Well, that was easy to pick up on.
Okay, I thought that maybe I was – okay.
You keep aging these characters down.
Oh, interesting.
So this is another movie about adults. Nobody's in high school. So you got a couple things right.
Actually. Yeah, what I get right.
So
what year is this movie?
This is 2001.
2001.
This was, to my knowledge, way before Bros. The first attempt at a gay rom-com.
Oh.
That was even a little bit mainstream.
I got it. I got it.
So it was written by Dan Bukatinski, who's also the star. Two of these movies are indies written by somebody who's like, I'll be the star of it. Yeah.
Well, Jen's Big O, or Amy's and it was Big O, whatever the fuck that was.
It was originally, Amy's O, Orgasm.
Yeah.
It was originally a stage play. And then be adapted into an indie film.
Sure. Sassy Grandma?
You got that right. Not a sassy grandma, but a sassy mom.
Oh. Who always knew he was gay?
He always knew he was gay.
Is it a coming out?
No, that's what I was going to say. Okay. It's not a coming out story. Everybody in it is out already.
Okay. And how old are they? They're in their 60s?
They're in their... They're not in their 60s. They're in their 30s.
All right.
Sassy mom played by Andrea Martin.
Of course.
Who is a therapist and of course was we're very accepting of you. Very accepting Jewish liberal mom.
Would this have been after Big Fat Greek Wedding? What year is that?
Big Fat Greek Wedding 2003. So this is before. A couple years before.
Okay.
Another movie where like weird people show up. So Andrea Martin's his mom.
Yeah.
There's a running joke in the, so why I think this movie is important to me is A, because it was representation as a child.
And it
so
only
I
watched exists this, in your imagination because it's not a real film.
To Joanna Kearns who's in it.
When did this come out? I mean, where did
tell
this come
this,
out?
Tell it to Lisa Kudrow who's in it. Where? God knows. I only saw it on HBO. Okay. HBO. I don't even know if it had a wide release.
Second HBO.
It was rated, I don't even know if it had a wide release or if it was just whatever. It was not straight to DVD, though.
Straight to Redbox.
Why this is important to me is because it was representation. It was the first movie I saw in high school that was about gay people that I was gay people can live a normal life.
Yeah.
Gay men can like have a rom-com about them. And it's not Bros, which I think is so overrated.
You don't like Bros?
I think it's okay at best. I'm going to be totally honest.
I thought it was funny.
It's funny.
I think overrated is a crazy thing to call something that's that much of a failure, basically.
Okay, so then I think it deserved a little bit of its floppiness.
Okay.
Like, I don't think it was that good. I actually think it was like, when I was watching it, I was like, this feels regressive.
Okay.
Yeah. So he is a... What you did get right is that he has a sassy best friend.
Well, that was
she was played by Sasha Alexander. You'll probably recognize her from like various TV shows and stuff. She's kind of like a C-list actress.
Mm-hmm.
And the other gay guy played by Richard Ruccolo, who was so hot in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And I had a huge crush on, who in real life is married to Tiffany Amber Thiessen. So he's straight in real life.
Oh.
His best friend is played by Adam Goldberg, who's been in many things. He was in Friends, Phoebe's brother.
The other Adam Goldberg.
Yeah. They start dating, and then they're like, let's hook up our gay best friends with each other. So they hook up him, Eli, and Richard Ruckel, who plays Tom. And what you did get right is that they're both out and gay.
Uh-huh.
But Tom is like a slut and is like a non-committal. Like, he's not like, we're just playing around, I'm not gay. He's like, I'm not looking for a relationship kind of guy. So they have like some, they have a bad date, then they have a good date, then they like,
it's not hard to come up with a rom-com.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah. He has a sassy mom. He has a sassy sister played by Christina Ricci.
Sure, you bet.
You know, and then it ends with the straight friend's wedding. Okay. And then they hook up and make up at the wedding, and they couldn't get married
yet. It did end with an event.
It ends with an event.
Yeah.
They dance together at the wedding. Okay. And a good time is had by all. And it's for my money, it's very underrated, meaning like it's nobody knows about it, but I think it's good. All over the guy. And one of the funniest. A real movie that exists. Doris Roberts is in it. She's in an AIDS clinic. She plays the receptionist.
Oh, my goodness.
He's telling the story to her as he's waiting to take an AIDS test. Oh, okay. Because, of course, it's the early 2000s, late 90s. You can't have a gay movie without AIDS being a part of it.
Sure, of course.
And one thing that I think is really funny in it and actually really progressive for the time, because remember, this is only 2001. Is there's a running joke throughout the whole movie making fun of the movie In and Out.
Oh, okay.
And the parents, Andrew Martin, being like, fuck that movie. Yeah. It's horrible representation. He only now realizes he's gay. Boo, that's a horrible movie. And it's like throughout the movie, it's a running joke that they make fun of In and Out.
Well, that was a weird movie. I remember at the time.
Such a weird movie.
People liking it and being like, oh, it's good.
It's progressive.
But it's like, it depicts a man who doesn't a grown man
yeah.
who doesn't know himself. That's also what happened, I think, with the Ellen show too. Like,
oh, I realized I'm gay.
Yeah.
Which when really the real story is I'm willing to say it out
loud.
Right. But I think at that time, yeah, very leaning into this imaginary narrative of like you could just discover
As
an adult. Well, I mean, I don't want to say that. There are people who like have late in life coming out stories. But
like Cynthia Nixon.
Like Cynthia Nixon. Or like Miranda Hobbs.
On and off screen.
But yeah, they make fun of that movie a lot. I think it's obvious why I like this movie a lot, but I remember watching it and being titillated by it. And then also being like life affirmed.
And this is where your the origin story of you loving Andrea Martin comes from.
Yes. No, but seriously. Yes. You know, and it was nice to see as a kid, like, these are people who are like adults and professionals, and like this isn't a story about
about
how horrible it is to be gay. Yeah. It's like fun.
Yeah.
And then they get to have a cute rom com.
Yeah, representation is actually really important.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
How about that? Okay. All right, so now your last one, guessing a narrative.
Okay. So it's Double Indemnity.
Yes.
So all I know about this is that it's a noir movie. It's old. It is, and it's starring Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck, and
I don't know if it's on the post. I think it's written by Raymond Chandler.
Edward G. Robinson. I know that.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready for Double Indemnity.
Okay. All right, this one. Okay. I hope I get this close. So I also...
Well,
okay.
It's a genre thing, right? Well, okay. So you can always...
Yeah, I tried to write... It might... While I was writing this, I was like, am I rewriting Kiss Before Dying? I might have... This might be a Kiss Before Dying, which is another noir.
Okay.
Because I know that Double Indemnity is like when you get paid double... by an insurance company because of an accident.
Yeah.
Okay. Fred McMurray plays a devilishly handsome criminal mastermind.
Yeah.
He's just been released from the slammer where he served time for being a rapscallion old-timey criminal. He takes on a new identity as a respectable man and coordinates a fake chance meeting with a beautiful young heiress played by Barbara Stanwyck. Mm. Someone in prison told him about this woman.
Sure.
He charms the pants off her at a romantic dinner, and then there's a scene where he gives her a Hollywood kiss and carries her off to the bedroom to make love, despite the fact that she doesn't know much about him, and then we fade to black, because that's what those movies did at the time.
Right, it's during the code era.
Yeah. Time jump. We open on their wedding. It's a lavish wedding.
Yeah.
Edward G. Robinson plays her stuffy rich dad, who's like, how do we know this guy again? Who is this guy really? But he can't stop the marriage, So he just stands there during the ceremony making snide comments about he's going to get to the bottom of who this creep is.
Okay.
To the to her brother or something.
Okay.
Anyway, I wrote anyway. On the night of their wedding,
anyway,
we close in on a shot of Fred writing a letter to another woman about how he's going to murder Barbara Stanwyck to make it look like an accident so that they can start a life together.
Dumb.
He tries to get her to accidentally drink bleach or something, but it doesn't work. I couldn't think of... We meet the sleazy woman he's actually in love with, and she gives him a timeline and says she can't wait around forever. He says it's okay, babe, because... It's okay, babe, because all capitals, Double Indemnity.
Okay.
So they're on a street corner, and Barbara Stanwyck's dad, who's been secretly spying on him this whole time, drives by, sees him with the woman, and they make eye contact. Shaken, he rushes home before dad can get there, and it's like a race. But then the dad's car crashes, and he dies. And all the Double Indemnity money goes to Gwen. Oh, wait, no, her name was Barbara. I changed it to Gwen midway through.
Well, Barbara Stanwyck is the name of the actress.
I don't know where I got Gwen from. So now
okay.
He's got, so now she's got a shit ton, even more money than she originally had.
Sure.
And the one threat to his plan has been eliminated. So naturally, he's thinking, I'll bump off this bitch and get quadruple indemnity.
Mm. Oh, that's, I don't think that's a thing.
He becomes sloppy and decides and announces to the audience by way of a phone call with the sleazy woman that he's just going to toss her out a window of their penthouse apartment and claim it was an accident. Mm. But we see that his phone call is being overheard by the brother. Mm. He leaves to go to do the deed without realizing the brother is on his tail. I kind of started borrowing from Rear Window here.
Sure, sure.
Back at the apartment, yeah, there's a big dramatic scuffle. He reveals his entire plan to her and says, now I'm going to get rid of you forever. He picks her up to throw her off the balcony. And just as it seems like he's going to do it, we hear a shot ring out. The brother shot him. Mm. And then he falls out over the balcony. And then she and the brother embrace. The end.
No.
None of it?
No. And in fact, you have the roles completely reversed. Fred McMurray is a good, like, honest guy who gets pulled into crime by Barbara Stanwyck, who's the femme fatale.
Oh.
So Fred...
So she's not the damsel.
No, no, no. She is the villain.
Oh, okay.
Fred McMurray is an insurance salesman named Akira. No, he's an insurance salesman, and he goes to this guy's house to get him to sign his like car insurance policy, but he meets this woman and she's like beautiful and very it's got real great snappy dialogue, like, hey, what are you doing, neighbor? You know, like that kind
what's
of thing.
That,
like
Philadelphia Story.
Yeah, it's very, very snappy. But so they're like flirty, and she starts to talk about like life insurance, and he realizes like he's like, don't even think about it. Like, he realizes that she's thinking about bumping off her husband, and he's like,
oh, so she's married.
Yeah, and he's like, that never works.
Is she married to Edward G. Robinson?
No. Edward G. Robinson works with Fred McMurray. He's also an insurance investigator, and he's sort of like a detective character, and he investigates things, and he's got a nose for like when a claim is bullshit.
Okay.
But he's like smitten by her, even though he tells her like, no, that's, you can't do it. She comes to his house and she's like, throws herself at him. They have like fade to black sex.
Oh, okay, I got that.
Yes. He's like, I'm crazy about you. And then she's like, oh, my husband's so abusive, he's horrible, he doesn't love me. And then he's like, you know what, let's do it. I know how to I've seen all these schemes, I know how to do it right, and we won't get caught. So they come up with a scheme to kill the husband to get the money. So because he's an insurance salesman, he has the husband act like he's signing his car thing, but he's really signing a life insurance policy.
Okay.
And they say they're gonna do the murder on a train because the policy says if it happens on a train, it's Double Indemnity, and they get twice the money.
Why?
Because it's a more rare thing, I guess, that you die on a train.
So because they wanted to get this movie on a train.
Yeah. It's not on a train. That's just one thing.
Huh.
They kill this plot is like they kill him, and then he dresses up like him. He goes on the train and then jumps off the train.
So he becomes bad.
Yes, he gets. Well, that's the femme fatale, right? Like,
right.
This is during the Hollywood Hays Code, right? So the movie is all being narrated by him by he's dying, because you can't be bad and win at that time. You had to die if you were bad. So he's like, he's actually speaking into a dictaphone and recording the whole story to Edward G. Robinson.
Okay.
But he's like, you tell, like, in the first scene, he's like holding his side and he's like talking, and he's like sweating. So you can tell he's been shot. The plan goes off. They kill the guy. They get away with it. No one has a problem with it. Even like Edward G. Robinson doesn't see an issue with it. But then like things start to go bad. Edward G. Robinson comes to his house and he's like, you know, I've been thinking about it and it just doesn't make sense. You know, why would he go on that train? So, you know, like he starts to like dig into it, but he doesn't realize that his friend is the one who's doing it.
Yeah.
We find out that there's a daughter. The guy had a daughter and she has this a boyfriend with an Italian last name. So, you know, he's trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And we find out that the Italian kid's been fucking the wife too. So she, oh, and also the girl says, I think that she killed my mother because she was the mother's. The woman, Barbara Steinman, she's married to this guy, but she was his wife's nurse, and then she died, and then she married him.
Okay.
So the stepdaughter and her don't like each other, but the stepdaughter thinks that she killed his mother, which she did. So Barbara Steinman really was doing everything, and this guy fell for it. And she just needed him because he was an insurance guy.
Interesting.
And then he, at the end, he goes, and he's going to kill her. He's going, like, way down the rabbit hole. He sees the only way out for himself is to kill her and pin it on the Italian. but she shoots him, and then he shoots her, and he does kill her. But then he's dying, and then at the end, Edward G. Robinson finds him, and he dies.
Wow.
And that's Double Indemnity.
Okay. That sounds way better than what I had.
Yeah, it's a very good movie. It's a very good movie. Yeah. so what's my last one? Oh, Sweet Charity. Oh, boy. Let's buckle up for this. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm even near the right time period
let's
for this.
Let's go for it.
Okay. Sweet Charity. This is I know it's a musical.
Yeah.
Shirley MacLaine plays Charity.
So you knew so you knew it was Shirley MacLaine.
For the poster.
Great. Okay.
So you always take a, like you with Akira, you always take a gamble when you say that you think that's the name of the character.
She is named Charity.
Okay,
right.
I was right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Shirley Playmates Charity. She's a hoofer. She dances at go-go shows. but she has dreams of being big on, you know, being on the Great White Way, a dancer on Broadway. She lives in a divey hotel / apartment with a bunch of other showbiz nobodies and has-beens, including an old lady next door who helps her with her groceries. This old lady has seen it all. She claims she was very close to starring in an MGM movie, but wouldn't fuck Louis B. Mayer, so Whoa. It didn't happen. I don't know why. I was thinking a lot about film history.
Commentary.
Yeah. Charity meets a charming guy who says he wants to be her agent, and she believes him, and they start spending all their time together. She starts ignoring all her friends, including the old lady next door. She goes on what she thinks is an audition that she landed, but it's really an open casting call where she's surrounded by a bunch of other hot young dancers. And she realizes her agent doesn't really have any connections. Even worse, when she was out gallivanting around, the old lady next door passes away. Just when she thinks all is lost, she gets a call. From that open casting call, they like her and they want to see her come back and do a screen test. But when she gets there, it's a casting couch situation, and that guy tries to fuck her.
Wow.
She kicks him in the balls and runs away. In the end, she quits her go-go job and decides to write and choreograph her own show. The end.
Wow. Okay. But not that. I mean, not that far off.
Okay.
In some ways. So when you said she's a hoofer,
yeah,
she's a hoofer. Dancer.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
She wants to be like a Broadway dancer, but really she just wore like a go-go club, so she's like in a cage.
Okay.
Like,
So she is. So okay, this is 1969. So yeah. Like, there's a million different ways to say that she's a hooker without saying she's a hooker,
mm-hmm.
Like Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Mm-hmm.
So she is a dance hall hostess.
Right.
So she is a dancer.
Yes.
And in a club.
Too. But she's really.
She's a sex worker.
You have to read it as a sex worker.
Yes. Okay. Even though they never say that.
Right.
She. You don't know any of the songs from this?
No. Unless you say them and I know them.
Okay. Would it shock you if I tell you that the opening number to this is Hey Big Spender?
No, that would shock me.
Yeah, that's what it is. Okay. Hey, big spender. It's all the sex workers singing that.
Oh, okay.
Spend a little
in the
time
in the show. Is it more obvious that she's a sex worker?
It's obvious in both. They just never say it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, hey, big spender is very overt.
Sure, right.
It's like, come spend money and I'll give you a good time.
Interesting, interesting.
Do you want to have fun?
I just read Rax King's new book and there's an essay called Hey, Big Spender in it.
Does she mention this?
No, she does not.
And the other big song from this show is If They Could See Me Now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she's a sex worker with a heart of gold.
You bet you. Yeah.
It's very Breakfast at Tiffany's adjacent.
Sure.
Okay. She's a wonderful person. She's very sweet. She has bad luck. She's looking for real love. She's not looking to be a star. She's looking for love. And she's just in one bad relationship after the other, creep after creep, that kind of thing. And then at the end, she meets this guy, Oscar, who's like a nice guy, like a kind of a boring guy, but she really likes him. He really likes her. Mm. They hit it off. It's really cute. She doesn't want him to know what she does for a living. Mm. She tells him that she works at a bank. He offers to marry her. He proposes. Mm. She says yes. But then it comes out that what she really does, and he breaks off the engagement.
Oh.
And then, but then, like, the ending number is like, it's okay, I'm still hopeful, and I'm gonna find the right guy someday. So I'm gonna find love.
So there's kind of an ending where it's bad, but she's like, I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah, it's in the movie version, she takes up with some hippies in Central Park,
sure,
which is weird. But I saw this on Broadway with Christina Applegate as Charity.
Uh-huh.
And in that version, which was, I think, the original version, she just kind of sings a song about, like, I'll be okay. And then it ends with those, like, neon signs that say she lived hopefully ever after.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then when they made the film version, it's a Bob Fosse joint with the book written by Neil Simon.
Interesting.
When they made the movie, Bob Fosse directed the movie, and he directed a happy ending where he comes back and says, like, just kidding, I love you. Let's actually get married, because he anticipated the studio was going to want that.
Uh-huh.
But then the studio actually – because they had a habit during that time of, like, if you adapt something, it must have a happy ending.
Interesting.
But then actually, surprisingly, the studio was like, no, you can keep the original ending. So they kept the original ending. So that's Sweet Charity.
Okay.
Kind of – I mean, you got, like, the DNA.
I think now that I'm thinking about it, I think what I weaved in with some of the movie Dance Girl Dance.
You had a lot of, like, with, casting couch stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking about Dance Girl Dance, which is a movie with
– Oh, I assume you were thinking of Scream 3.
No. No. Dance Girl Dance is a movie with Lucille Ball in a serious role. This was when she was, like, a blonde bombshell.
Hmm.
And I think there's casting couch stuff in that.
You know something funny about Lucille Ball? I just, you know, with Frankenstein,
yeah,
being a big hit, yeah, a lot of people are like on social media and like in the culture,
mm-hmm,
in these streets,
yeah,
like giving big props and reminding everyone that Mary Shelley invented science fiction.
Yeah.
And then I saw something else saying, and the godmother of science fiction is Lucille Ball. And she never gets any credit for it because apparently she fought really hard for Star Trek to, yes, get on the air.
Didn't I say that on this show?
I don't. Oh, to me?
I believe I did.
If you did, I don't remember.
No, she
that.
Did. She, Desi Lu produced Star Trek, and she was big behind it.
Yeah.
She really believed in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they said Mary Shelley and Lucille Ball are the mother and godmother of science fiction.
Yeah. I love that. There was also female writers. They had one of the big writers was DC Fontana, because they were using an acronym to seem like a man, but it was Dorothy Fontana.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how often, like, when you do this, you can't help but, like, weave in another narrative.
Existing things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what have we learned from this experiment now that we've done it twice?
Huh.
I feel like what I always take away from this, or what I've taken away from this now for the second time, is that, like, it's kind of easy to put together a movie in 5 seconds.
Yeah. If you've seen it.
Based on tropes.
Well, it's like being an AI.
Yes, like that's what it feels like.
Like, it's like, here's a title, make up a thing, and we did it.
Yeah. So what does that say? Does that just say something about us that we've seen a lot of movies, or
it says something about us? It says something about movies.
It says
something about the really. I mean, it's in the margins. It's not just a story that makes a movie, but
right,
it is.
Right.
I don't think there's anything to learn here.
This is just masturbation. This is just an exercise.
Just see more movies.
Utility.
Well, you know, on this show, we talk a lot about the things we've seen. Why not talk about the things we haven't seen?
So now, will you watch any of these?
I would watch any of them. But if I had to, like, pick one to watch right now, I would want to watch If Lucy Fell.
I think you should watch that one. I think it's fun. Yeah. I think Jen would like it.
Okay.
Too. I would like to see Double Indemnity. I feel like I would like
it. Yes, Double Indemnity is good. It's very good.
I feel like I would fall asleep during Akira, if we're all being honest with
ourselves. No, I don't think you'd like Akira at all.
No, I'd fall asleep. And what was the other one? Oh, Return? I don't know.
You might, because it's funny. You might like that.
Maybe.
But no, Double Indemnity is a genuine classic movie.
Yeah.
So what we learned is... that Double Indemnity means when you have a policy, they'll pay you twice if it's a weirder death.
For some reason, like when you first said Double Indemnity for a minute, I thought you were referring to Public Enemy. I don't know why that was in my mind. And I was like, oh, I know Double Indemnity. It's like the one on the Great Movie Ride.
Well, wait, doesn't Public Enemy have Edward G. Robinson in it?
Is that why I'm thinking it?
Confusing it with Scarface. I always confuse Public Enemy and Scarface.
I don't know. I just know that I was thinking of the noir section of the Great Movie Ride, and there's a big Public Enemy poster.
No, it's James Cagney.
And then you hear like a meow of like a cat in an alleyway. You know.
Mm.
Noir is all about cats in alleyways.
Yeah, sure. well, this was great.
It was. I hope the listeners feel the same way.
Yeah. I wonder how this goes with people that have seen these films. And people yeah. Well, Anthony, by gum, we did it.
I think we did.
Well, let's put this baby to bed. We end every episode by saying
go bye-bye.